Welcome to JGL Law For You. JGL Law For You is a podcast by lawyers, but not for lawyers only. On JGL Law For You, we will be discussing a wide array of topics to help you navigate the many legal processes, developments in the law, other current events, and how they may affect you, your family, or your business. Today, I have my partner and colleague at Joseph Greenwald & Lake, a specialist in the area of family law. Chris has been working with clients for over 10 years. On all areas of family law cases. And today we're talking about a particular niche about retirement accounts. Now, most of us, when we think of retirement accounts, we think of, you know, my IRA, what's in my IRA, what's in my 401k at work. But in fact, there's a lot of different types of accounts and there's different ways that they're handled in family law cases. And that's what we're to talk about today, right, Chris?
That's right, David. Thank you for having me on again today. And it's an exciting but important topic.
Yeah, it's interesting in the scope of family law. I think when we talked about this earlier, the place to start, well, like with most things, is at the beginning. So tell us a little bit about what different types of retirement assets are there generally, and then we're going to move to how they can get divided, if at all, in a divorce case.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's so many different flavors of retirement benefits. You know, there's the more common and then the less common, right? And that has changed over time. We're all familiar with the 401k concept, but then there's also flavors of other benefit programs such as a 403b. You mentioned an IRA. There's an IRRA, right?
A lot of letters, Chris.
A lot of letters, a lot of acronyms. And it's all done that way because it's all part and parcel to the federal tax code and state tax codes, because there is tax benefits to each one of these types of retirement accounts. The more traditional account that I think is important to talk about, and there's a few different flavors, is the pension account. At least in America, the pension account has waned over time. There's a lot less organizations that offer pensions, but they're certainly still available in government agencies, whether it's federal or state and or local. And it is certainly a benefit and a retirement asset that it comes up quite often in divorce cases.
Let me ask you a question, because again, let's assume that folks are learning this stuff from the very beginning here. Well, isn't everything kind of a pension? I mean, what's the difference between a pension, like you call it, and, you know, a retirement account, a 401k or an IRA? What's the difference?
So a lot of people know, or perhaps a lot of people know what an annuity is, right? A pension is essentially just an annuity, right? It is a payment that you receive from your organization after you retire that is a set amount per month, right? That's the easiest way to understand it. So, you know, you've worked at a company for 20 years. After you retire, you're going to receive a set amount of money per month, right? Now, there's different options that you can take. For instance, you could sell it and wrap it into a different annuity. You could take a lump sum for it. But what we're talking about in general terms is your pension is a benefit that you get as a per month payment. You know, I like to think of it, it's easiest to think about, you know, everyone knows like the lottery, right? You can either get that lump sum version or you can get the annuitized payment.
But it's something that you earn. So it's something that someone earns during the course of their employment, whether, as you mentioned, with a government entity or military maybe or something else. It's something that's earned while they're working there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the employment benefits that accrues during the process of employment. That's right.
Okay. And just to put a fine point on this sort of comparison to an annuity. So an annuity might be something that you or I just go out and buy as an investment vehicle, right?
That's right.
The pension is something that your employer is providing to you that has a lot of similarities to the annuity, and it provides the same sort of payout benefits and alternates that you talked about.
That's right. And it depends on the various different plans that you're a part of or the organization. You know, some people may have to pay into their pension. Some people get it as part of their compensation package and they don't have to actually pay per month to it. And it depends on if you can take a lump sum or not. But at its core, yes, it's an annuitized payment that is based on essentially an actuarial prediction of one's lifespan.
Again, I'm trying to think about if I didn't know what I know, right? You know, going into a divorce and, you know, we've got houses, we've got some bank accounts, maybe some stocks or cars or whatever it is. You know, these are things that I have today, right? Versus this pension that you're talking about, or another type of retirement vehicle, the 401k, 403b, IRAs, whatever they may be. But I don't have them today. I can't. So how are they divided? For our two-part question is, does it matter, you know, when you earn these assets, when you start to acquire or accumulate these assets, and how do you even divide them?
Yeah, sure. So the first question I always ask when I talk to a brand new person before, you know, I'm just trying to understand the lay of the land, right? That question is, what type of retirement are we looking at, right? Okay, let's just, for argument's sake, it's 401k. The next natural question is, when did you acquire that? As you say, like the acquisition. If it was acquired because I worked at company A, and that was 5 years before the marriage, and that 401k is just still sitting there, well, that's going to be a non-marital asset, right? That was acquired prior to the marriage. So then the next scenario is, well, I was working at company A, I'm still there, and I got married, and I started acquiring or getting the benefit of that 401k, both when I was single, not married, and since I've been married, right? So now we've got the little bit more complicated scenario of a portion of the 401k is non-marital and a portion of the 401k is marital. And then there's the, let's be real, the easier scenario, right? Which is, started working at company A after I got married, and that's when I started getting the 401k. The entire 401k is marital. As far as the division of these different accounts, with that question in mind of what's marital, what's non-marital, you know, you present that to the court to say, all right, this percentage, this quotient of the retirement benefit that we're talking about, 401k, 403b, IRA, this is marital. So court, we're asking you to make a division of this account on, let's just assume, 50-50 basis. And so that's how it would be.
When you say marital versus non-marital, you mean if I'm your client, I say to you, all right, well, we were married in 1990. I started working at this job in 1985. I'm dating myself, as you can tell. But so now we're in 2025. It's 40 years later. I've been working for the same company for 40 years, and I've acquired this retirement asset over the 40 years. But some of those years were before me and my wife were married. So how do you figure out, you know, what my spouse's share might be? Does she get an interest in what I earned before I was married? That doesn't seem fair.
It's a slightly complicated question, but in the...
I specialize in those. Go ahead.
But in the general terms, right, if we're just going to look at the years that are marital and the years that aren't marital, I think you said 5 years were non-marital in this scenario. That would be about 88% of the 401k or the benefit is marital, acquired entirely during the marriage. You know, let's set aside the more complicated questions of, you know, dividend reinvestments or this or that and the other, or rollovers. So okay, how much is marital? How much is not marital? It's fair to say about 88% would be marital in this scenario.
So my risk in that scenario is that my soon-to-be former spouse has a claim to half of that 88%. Again, excluding these other factors that may impact that.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, what if we had a prenuptial agreement, you know, that said, you know, I keep my retirement, doesn't matter when, and this, now again, you know, let's keep in mind, we're married back in 1985, so it's 40 years ago, but we had a prenup. And in that prenuptial agreement that we both signed and we both had lawyers who explained it to us, it said that whatever retirement that I accumulate during our marriage is mine, regardless of what the law is. Is that something that's enforceable? I don't want to get too far into prenups, but I do want to, but that's important, it seems to me, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely important. If you have a solid prenup, as you say, that was properly negotiated, then that prenup is more likely than not going to successfully exclude that retirement account.
I don't want to get too far into the prenuptial agreement discussion. We talked about that before, and I want to have you back to talk about that again. But might my spouse in that circumstance say, well, hold on a second, you know, we got married 40 years ago, and now he's got $2 million in his retirement account. You're telling me I get nothing out of that? I mean, is there some sort of an equitable argument, even though there's a prenup? And again, I'm trying not to go too far down this road, but while we're talking about it, is that some risk that I have?
Not to give the lawyer answer, there's always going to be a risk. That caveat, you know, there's always a creative argument floating out in the ether somewhere. But generally speaking, I would feel, I like to go based on a scale of confidence. I would feel pretty darn confident in that scenario that that's going to be excluded.
All right. So let's go back to the topic at hand here. And so we've talked about the relative ease in figuring out what's the marital portion of what we call a defined contribution plan, which is this 401k, the 403b, IRAs, and so forth. But tell us a little bit about this defined benefit plan, this pension arena. You know, how do they get divided since there's not really an amount of money sitting in a bank account today?
Well, that's right. So how they figure out the actual payment to you, there's a portion of the larger, without getting too much into it, there's a portion of the larger plan that all the employees or the plan participants are entitled to reinvestments of this plan at hedge funds. We don't have to get into all that, but it's essentially they're going to look at various different factors to determine what your annuity payment's going to be, right? They're looking at your salary, average salary, and there's various different plans look at it differently. But commonly people know about, at least in the federal government, right, the high three, which is the average highest 3 years of salary. They'll look at your age, how long you've been employed, and then the actuarials, the people behind the scenes, behind the curtains, are going to predict how long is this person going to live, because that's how much the payment is going to be. That's when we get into the actuarial aspects of the pensions.
Okay, so what you're talking about is trying to figure out what today's value of that pension might be, even though it's going to be paid over a period of years down the road, right?
Yeah, there's the option. There's two different options when you're evaluating a pension plan, and the concept of a divorce is one is a present value, and then the other is the as if and when predicted value, right? The present value, and I'm sure, David, you do this just as well as all of us, which is, you know, you hire that expert to get into it and figure out what that present value of that pension plan is today and present that to the court.
Okay, but wait. So why would a client care about the present value if the client's spouse isn't going to be getting that benefit for years down the road? Why does it make any difference? So if I get my share, don't I have to wait? Or is there some other way to get relief based on this present value of this pension?
Well, yeah, there's certainly ways that if you present, if you've opted to present a present value determination of the pension, then you can certainly present that to the court. And as long as, you know, the assets necessary to what we call horse trade or set off the values are available, then, you know, you could present a creative solution to the court to say, listen, you know, I understand that the pension is worth a total of $300,000. I'm due $150,000 from that, and you can get it from the cryptocurrency account.
So you might have a client who says, look, I don't want to wait 10 years, 20 years, whatever it is, to get my money, you know, and so here's a pool of assets. I'd rather get my share of what the value is today rather than waiting, right? That's what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, there's a benefit to that, right? Present value of money has a certain value to people. You know, some people enjoy the aspect of investing, and perhaps they think, you know what, I can invest this money better than a hedge fund out there can. So I'm going to take my present value. I'm going to invest it the way I want to invest it.
Let's shift for a second. And now your client says, you know, this is my only retirement, whatever I get from this pension. So I want to keep it as my retirement. Then let's go back to this same circumstance where a portion of the years that my spouse worked and earned this pension was earned during the marriage and a portion was earned before the marriage. How am I getting my money and how is it determined how I'm going to get my money?
So you're referring to the plan participant, the employee who earned.
Yeah, how's my, yeah, your client's the employee. I wasn't clear. Your client's the employee who says to you, you know what, I'm comfortable with what I'm going to get in terms of an asset division, but I don't have any retirement. What my spouse earned is going to be, you know, whatever I can get from that is going to be my retirement. So I just want my share as if it were a retirement asset. I want it in cash today. I don't want a horse trade. So how is it determined what I'm entitled to? And how is it paid to me?
The benefit plan would be paid once, and let's set aside, there's yet another caveat of separate interest versus shared interest for pensions. So let's assume that we're talking a shared interest, right? Shared interest means that once the plan participant receives, once they receive their benefit payment on that per month basis from the plan administrator, then a portion of that is also going to go to the alternate payee, the spouse, right? The former spouse. And so, yes, you got to wait. Could be 5 years, could be 10 years. But once that pension goes into pay status, you're going to receive your portion of that pension payment. Now, how what the amount is determined to be is going to be based on if it's a shared interest, it's going to be based on the plan participant's life and factors. You know, we talked about those salary, age, years of service, actuarial factors. And it's going to be based on how much of the pension was acquired during the marriage, right? So if all of it was acquired during the marriage and there's no equitable division that varies from the 50-50, then that pension payment, well, half of that, less any necessary fees, half of that will go to the alternate payee or the former spouse. I don't know if you want to get into separate interest, but just very briefly, if that's an availability for the plan in question, and that's a big if, but some of the larger Fortune 50 companies certainly offer separate interests in the pension. What that basically is you negotiate. David, when it comes to a separate interest, and that's assuming that the plan allows for a separate interest, but certainly a lot of Fortune 50 and larger companies, you know, their pension plans, to the extent that they offer a pension plan, they offer what's called a separate interest. And a separate interest basically just means you segregate out the portion of the pension benefit plan that would go to the plan participant for the benefit of the alternate payee, the former spouse. And the former spouse is now an actuarial factor, right? So you're going to look at that individual's age. And you know, depending on the plan, there's certainly some strategy that may oversell it, but strategies that you can employ from a financial perspective. You know, should we take a separate interest or should we take a shared interest in this plan? But that's a bit more of a specific discussion.
I don't want to drill too far down, but when you say a separate interest, does that mean that my spouse would then have their own separate pension apart from mine?
Essentially, right. It's so the employee's pension that was acquired during their marriage is now divided in whatever that percentage of division was, right? Let's just make it easy. It's divided in half. And so now the pension plan sees the alternate payee spouse as it's a distinct recipient of that pension. So essentially what happens is that the pension plan divides the pension in two parts, the actual plan participant's pension, and then the alternate payee or former spouse's has its own distinct pension within that umbrella.
All right. So let's get off the separate plans for a moment and go back to the shared interest, right? You know, and so go back and now here I am, your client again. I want to wait to get my benefit when my spouse retires, but what happens if my spouse dies, either before I start to acquire my share of the pension or during the course of the time that I'm acquiring my pension? You know, so I don't like him very much, but I still don't want him to get hit by a bus. But you know, that's what happens. He's gone. Do I lose my benefit?
In the shared interest world, the answer is anticlimactically, yes, you would lose that benefit. Now, there's another subset within the pension plan, right? And that's called a survivor benefit annuity. The survivor benefit annuity, the best way to think of it is essentially an insurance policy on the plan participant. You know, the person receiving the pension benefit would pay a certain amount of their monthly benefit towards this quote unquote insurance policy so that if the plan participant in a shared interest world predeceases, then a portion of the pension benefit will still go to the alternate payee.
So if I pay for this survivor benefit annuity out of my share of the benefit that I'm entitled to, then, and my spouse predeceases me, it's almost like you said, it's an insurance policy. So I would still get my benefit, even though I might live an extra 10 or 15 years, whatever it might be, after the death of my former spouse.
That's right. And so it comes at a cost, but that's with anything, right? There's a reward to the risk that's employed. Now, I should say this much to go back to the separate interest. You know, it's a wholly less relevant conversation to have relative to the survivor benefit if it's a separate interest, right? Because the benefit of separate interest is essentially building in that concept that even if the plan participant predeceases, you're still getting your distinct payment.
So, Chris, now let me ask you another question entirely. We've been talking about, you know, the former spouse getting their 50% share of the marital portion of this retirement asset, whatever type of retirement vehicle it is. Are there any factors that might affect whether or not the former spouse gets more or less than that 50% share?
Well, certainly. In Maryland, we're an equitable division state, which means that when you get to court, the court's going to weigh the equities between the parties, right? And there's various different factors that could impact those equities and make the judge at the time say, you know what, I'm going to deviate from what would be the ordinary 50-50 division and say, maybe it's 55-45, maybe it's something different from that. And those factors, they could include the length of the marriage, you know, the health or age of the parties involved, certainly the contributions by either parties to the marriage, and, you know, what led to the estrangement of the marriage, what led to the breakdown of the marriage. And oftentimes that could lead to a alteration or deviation from that normal 50-50.
Okay, so there might be other factors that might affect, and in Maryland, you mentioned a few of them, that might affect the general, just drawing a line down the middle page, everybody gets half. Okay, so now we've gotten past the point there's going to be, I'm going to get my share of this retirement asset, whatever it is. You know, what happens? Does there have to be anything in writing, or is it part of the divorce decree, or is there something else that needs to be done in order for me to make sure that I get my money that I'm entitled to?
For the purposes of this conversation, let's set aside an IRA. And I'll just say briefly, for an IRA, all you need is a form that's usually found within the plan documents or on the website for your IRA, and you could do a transfer of assets, okay? So let's set that aside for a moment. For your 401ks, your 403bs, your pension plans, you know, all the quote-unquote traditional retirement vehicles, you would need what's called an eligible domestic relations order, right? Oftentimes, these are referred to as qualified domestic relations orders. The federal government has their own spin on what they call them. But generally speaking, it's a court order that mandates the plan administrator to divide the pension or the 401k or the whatever the retirement benefit is according to the court's order. Right? And that whether it's 50-50, 45-55, whatever it may be, as well as the survivor benefit to the extent that that was an option, right? So it's a court order that mandates how the retirement is divided.
Okay. And just for a second to go back to the traditional IRA, you know, we fill out the forms. Do I pay taxes on that money when it goes from my spouse's account into my account?
Yeah. So even with a quadro that, or an EDRO that transfers, let's say a 401k, part of that could be a, you know, lump sum transfer, whatever it may be, a tax transfer from one party to the other, whether it's an IRA or 401k or what have you, is a tax-free transfer. You know, it's called a transfer of assets incident to divorce. It's in the IRS regulations.
So if we're splitting an IRA and I'm getting, you know, pick any number, $100,000 from my spouse's IRA, it's being rolled into mine, I don't have to pay taxes on that when the transfer happens.
That's correct.
Okay. And what about when I start to get my benefit, the shift back over to, now we're in a pension arena, and now my spouse is retired and I'm getting my share of my, you know, my portion of the benefit each month. When I get those checks, do I pay taxes on those checks?
Well, certainly it's going to be treated as the normal income, depending on how it's being paid. You know, you're going to get the normal deductions that you would for, you know, any other form of payment.
So to sort of, you know, bring things to a head, wrap things up a little bit, you know, what would you say to folks who are looking at divorce, there's retirement assets that might be at issue? What's the best way to get there? What's the best way to find out more information?
Yeah, I mean, as I think, you know, you and I have had quite a few conversations now, one of the recurring themes in generally what I recommend to people is do the homework proactively, right? get your affairs in line, understand your budgets, like outline what your assets are. When it comes to retirement benefits, outline exactly what you have, what you believe to be non-marital, and for the sake of everyone involved, track down the documentation of these accounts. You know, the older the claim for non-marital portion of the asset, the harder it is to get those documents. So the sooner you start trying, the better it is going to be for you, right? But it's really to do that proactive homework. You know, the next step, in my humble opinion, is to talk to somebody, a professional, about how to deal with these retirement benefits. You know, oftentimes the retirement benefits are the largest asset in a marriage. You know, a lot of people think it could be the home, it could be, you know, the collector car, whatever it may be. But generally speaking, it's going to be the retirement benefits. And so this should be a significant focus of your case. So talking to somebody that has experience with various different pension plans, 401ks, federal retirement benefits, and particularly military benefits is important. And yeah, it's certainly recommended.
Yeah, this is it clearly is a little more complicated than, you know, how we're splitting up the furniture and how we're splitting up our cars. So if folks out there don't do this on your own, obviously, what you're hearing from Chris, and that's 100% correct. Don't try to figure this out on your own. And Chris, if people are listening and want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do it?
Yeah, they can call me directly at 240-399-7881, Joseph Greenwald and Lake, based out of Rockville, Maryland. And I'd be happy to talk about any and all retirement benefits issues that you have.
Thanks so much, Chris, for sharing the wealth of knowledge, or at least a portion of your wealth of knowledge today. Folks, I hope you enjoyed, got some information. Please join us next time. This is JGL Law for You.